Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, we talk to local leaders who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Jill McCall of Compassion Ministries. Nian Holmes leads the conversation that was recorded on March 13th in the KWBU studio.
Hello, I'm Nan Holmes, and welcome to KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. Today, I'm visiting with Jill McCall, Executive Director of Compassionate Ministries, right here in Waco. Jill, I am so thrilled to have this conversation because it's been too long since we visited.
You can say amen to that.
And as I always do, I want to start with your early years. Tell me about your beginnings.
Well, I am a native of Waco, born and raised here. I have, obviously, my family consisted of mom, dad, and two brothers, two mm-hmm. elder brothers. I was the baby. I was the queen in the family. But at the age of four, my dad died. And so my mother was left with three children. And in the early 50s, not a lot of resources to help her. There was Social Security, but as far as many daycares or anything like that, that wasn't around. She had been a stay-at-home mom and was used to that, and all of a sudden her world was turned upside down. So we did have the advantage, she did have the advantage of having family in the area mm-hmm. that was able to assist her some, and then at least until I was able to start school and she was able to get a job and move on from there. So she had some help. But it was still, I know now looking back, I think, oh my gosh, what did she feel? I mean, I never remember her crying or, being terribly sad, but I know that she must have felt very lonely and disconnected and thinking, this is not what I'd planned for my life kind of thing. I graduated from high school. I married at a young age. I was only 18.
You
do. Okay. I probably would have cringed had either of my children said, I want to get married at 18. But it was, and part of that, I think, was my upbringing, having not had a dad in the home and taking on maybe some responsibilities. I started working a little bit, really, when I was 14, but not really legally until 16. So there were differences there. And as my husband, who is 6 years older than me, says, I was really a lot more mature than he was at that age. So, but attended Baylor, graduated from Baylor, had my degree in education. And in 1975, I graduated from Baylor with a 396, and I could not get a teaching job within a 15-mile radius of Waco, Texas.
Wow.
It was, a rude awakening for me. My teaching field was social sciences, and of course, included in that was history and government. And the reality was coaches had those jobs. And once they had those jobs, they kept those jobs because a lot of times, I'm not against coaches, don't get mad, but a lot of times it was read the chapter and answer the questions at the end of that chapter. And so could not get a teaching job. Literally within a 15-mile radius of Waco. And so I was like, okay, so what do I do now? I've invested 4 years of my life getting this degree. A friend of mine who was currently working in Waco at that time said, oh, I think there's a job at juvenile probation for a volunteer coordinator. They'd be working with people. You'd be good at that. Mm-hmm. And so I went to juvenile probation and worked there 3 years from 75 to 78. Now, I've probably gone on too long about the early part. I don't know if you want me
That's okay. I mean, I think that sometimes it's helpful when we get into the conversation of leadership to understand something about where the person started.
Right.
Well, who were those people who developed the leadership skills that you needed later on? Even when you look back, was it your family, your teachers? Who were the people who inspired you?
Well, I think initially, for sure, my mother, because she just had to get in there and be the leader of the family, be the breadwinner, be the leader, be the disciplinarian. She had to take on many roles. And like I say, I really didn't recognize that probably as, quote, leadership, something. But I didn't recognize that as leadership then. My years at Juvenile, I would have to say Judge Bill Logue was an enormous influence on me. I remember when I first came to work there, and obviously I was barely older than some of the people I was supervising at Juvenile at that time. I was 22 years old, and some of them were right at 16, 17 years old. But I remember one day in particular, I was at my desk, and he walked by in his saunter like he usually did, and he said, "Jill, what's wrong?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, and I don't know if I should even say this to you, Judge Lake, but I don't know really how I feel about this particular case and what I should be recommending to the court when we come before you." And he said, "All you need to do is ask yourself one question, and that is, what is truly in the best interest of this child? Not what's in the best interest of the family, but what's in the best interest of the child, which may even be totally different from what the child thinks is in his best interest, but what's in the best interest of this particular child? And then go with it. That's all you can do." And so he made it very simple. He made it very simple for me, as simple as it could be, looking at everything we had to look at and figuring that out. After that, I actually became pregnant and was able to stay at home to have a nice 15-year vacation. But it really wasn't a vacation.
No, I don't think so. It's the hardest job you'll ever do.
Well, right. And I really did enjoy those years, but I also realized that I was the type of person that needed an outlet elsewhere. And so I became several things very involved with as a volunteer. Number one, my children's schools. I was a PTA president both at Mountain View Elementary and Carver Middle School. I helped develop two programs that went on to be statewide PTA volunteer. My whole thing about being in within the school was about parental involvement, because during those years in the 80s, et cetera, there was a lot of change in the Waco schools. Mm-hmm. And people, were moving from one area of town to another, busing, et cetera, and really trying to make parents feel welcome at a school and engaged and wanting to be a part of the school, and seeing that that was what made the biggest difference, I felt. And one of our programs at Mountain View Elementary was the Mighty Mustang Award, and I think back about that because I had to cut out like over 400 green Mustang horses to go on the walls of the cafeteria, because the kids got a star for everything, and it was as much about what the child did at school, and it was really a lot more about what the parent, even if the parent came and ate lunch with the child at school, they got a star. If the parent sent some napkins to a program or to like a party at the school, they got a star. So it was about getting that parent in whatever way, whether they were working or not working, but it tried to be inclusive of all people with their children, showing them the importance of that. I also then became very involved in the Junior League of Waco. Mm-hmm. I was president of the league from 94 to 95. So I learned a lot during that time, and my involvement at PTA led to me wanting to run for the school board, which I did in 1990, and was elected because of parental involvement. I saw when my first child went to Carver Middle School, it was kind of like the stepchild of the district. There were boards literally over the windows in the front. And it was like, what is that about? If you are so afraid of the neighborhood, of course, the child is going to be. The parents are going to be. Let's open up the school. Let's, you know, landscape the front. Let's make it a happy place. And all those things made a big difference. So it was those things that were going. And then when my youngest was going off to college in 1999, I had gone back to work at Juvenile in 1993. My husband said, your vacation is over. It's time for you to go back to work. We've got two children going to college, and you're going to need to help out here. And so I went back to Juvenile, and I enjoyed my time there then really a whole lot from 93 to 99. Did a lot of different jobs, training officer, placement coordinator, many, many different hats I wore. But when my last child was leaving the nest, I was like, okay, now what is going to challenge you? You're still not ready to go out to pasture at this point in your life. But what else can you do? I felt like I'd done everything I wanted to do at Juvenile. And so I kind of let it be known amongst my friends. I'm kind of looking for a challenge in my life. And I didn't know how big a challenge was going to come to my come on my doorstep, but it did. And I learned about this new, relatively new nonprofit, Compassion Ministries of Waco. And
was it there already there and you went there?
Yes. It
Who
was
started it
in 1994. Five downtown pastors began Compassion Ministries.
Oh.
It was Jimmy Doral with Church Under the Bridge, David Thames, I'm hoping I'm going to remember all these, David Thames with St. Paul's Episcopal, George Holland with Central Presbyterian Church, Reverend Bailey at
Seventh
and James Baptist, and I am sorry, I can't. It was First Lutheran, and I cannot remember the pastor's name. And obviously, I wasn't there, but it was those five pastors that said, you know, there is really not the resources for families with children in this community when they're in a crisis situation and need some help, need some shelter, need some housing. You know, there was the family abuse center then, but you had to be in an abusive situation and not just homeless or in a crisis situation like that. And so that's how it began in 1994. From 1994 to 1999, they went through four directors. I can tell, you know.
They chewed them up and spit them out.
It was a rock and roll ride. It was up and down the hills. I mean, and I understand that. It was a fledgling nonprofit. Funding was coming and going. There just was not the stability there. The second director, I believe, was a person that lasted 6 weeks. It was either 6 or 12 weeks. I remember looking at the records on that. 6 or 12 weeks. And then they hired a man who was, he really had the background, the skills, et cetera. But the funding came and went. And he had a family. He was the breadwinner for the family.
Same old story.
Same old story. And he just couldn't hang on. And I think he ended up going to Cal Farley's Boys Ranch. And I did actually meet him when he came back for the 10th anniversary of Compassion, and I did meet him then. His name was Jim Taylor, a very nice man. After that, they went through a couple of more directors, and just different things happened. And then the Junior League actually was giving Compassion their Millennium Gift, which was a large $250,000 grant, the largest grant the Junior League of Waco had ever given and has ever given and probably will ever give. And they realized that they had to get somebody in there that could finish the task, that could stay the course, because that was just the beginning seed money to raise money for the new facility that was going to be built. And so I went in and interviewed. One important thing that I learned was always be leery when they don't interview you at the place where you're going to work. I was interviewed always. They always saw me at Barnes & Noble. And I really did not go into the building that was there. The new building hadn't been built. And I went in the first day, and I went, oh, my goodness, what have I done? And the second day I went in, and the air conditioning went out in the entire facility, in the building. It was an old house on Austin Avenue.
Yeah.
And I was like, now what? And I found out there really wasn't money to fix it, and I had to just get to work. And I remember I literally went out on the front porch, sat on the steps, and cried. And I thought, maybe if I get down on my hands and knees and and walk back to juvenile and beg my boss, and would he please let me have my nice little office with my nice little furniture and everything all good with air conditioning and heat, because I've made the biggest mistake of my life. And I finally was like, okay, just calm down here. Let's take a step back. And I did that. And I thought, we're not going to give up this easily. You wanted a challenge. This is what you got. Let's get in there and see what we could do. And it's the best decision I made in my life, actually. Oh. It has been just, it opened me up to so many people, things, and places. And I can't imagine having not had that job in my life. It really became my personal challenge for me. And I think, you know, at first I was like, oh, you know, I really don't know how much compassion I had for the homeless when I got there, because my image was the same as many other people, the guy on the street corner that needs a bath and a shave. I now know that image to be erroneous when you consider the facts that the average age of the homeless in the U.S. today is 11, and 57% of the homeless are women and children. And on top of all that, Nan, the important thing was it hit me in the head. The light came on, you know, because at the age of 4, my dad died. My mom had 3 kids, you know, 4, 7, and 10. You know, we could have been homeless had it not been for the family we had here that helped my mom through that initial 2 years until she was really able to get a job, a full-time job, go to work, and keep our family together. But I could have been a child of compassion. And those are the folks that we deal with at Compassion. They are what more commonly I would call the working poor.
Mm-hmm.
Because when people come in, most of our folks, most of them do have jobs even when they come in, but they're very low-paying, low-skilled jobs, and it's not enough money to pay the rent and pay the utilities and put food on the table. It is not. And so those are the people that we work with, people that are really trying to get it together and provide for their families.
Well, you know, when I first met you, it was about 2002, but you just told me before that you had just kind of opened the doors, and Elizabeth Kelly and I, here at KWBU, when it was television, we had a PBS grant, and we had a focus group. I think it was for like 6 weeks, where residents would come down and air all their complaints. And I really learned a lot. And I'm sure you've had this experience over and over. I did it to Letha Coombe, where they're teaching you. Your eyes suddenly are wide open, and you get the whole picture, and your heart is really touched by this. And I know that you have a servant's heart, and that's what it almost takes. That component of leadership is that you see yourself serving your staff, serving the community.
I think you're absolutely right, Nan. I think if a person is in a job and they're, you have to have a passion for the mission. And if you are the leader of an organization and do not have that passion, you need to leave. You need to leave. You need to get out of that chair and let somebody else fill it, because That's what you have to have in a nonprofit or in any kind of leadership position, is to have that passion. Because if it's just like another job, you need to go work in a canning factory or whatever. or find another job where you do have a passion. Maybe it's not that particular job. It's not that mission at that organization that you love. Then you need to leave. You need to let somebody else take over.
And I remember that the one thing that came out of it was that transportation was a huge problem. Mm-hmm. And that was a lesson that I learned once I realized that, I've never forgotten it, but it also helped me at Talitha Kum because I knew about this problem.
Right.
And what are some of the more pressing things, that some of the challenges you have today, are they the same ones when you opened up?
They are. I mean, the transportation issue, people sometimes, you're right, that's one where until you really think about it, if you don't have a car, and, you know, I'm not naysaying the city here, because I realize that, you know, we're a medium-sized town. We don't have the luxury of being a big, big town. Maybe we wouldn't want to be, but, you know, public transportation can't run all the time. But, you know, if a mom has to take her child to the daycare, she gets off the bus. Well, the bus isn't going to wait for her. So
Absolutely.
She's got to wait 1 hour for the next bus to come by and take her then to work. And the same thing backwards when she's going home, 2 hours each way. I mean, unbelievable.
Crazy.
And I always say, you know, I admire our moms, so many of them. And let me say this too. It's not just moms that are there at Compassion. We take single fathers with their children. We take married couples with their children. So the deciding factor is with children, because there are lots of shelters or housing things in Waco, but they don't take children. And so that's the deciding factor for it. But I would have to say transportation is one of the biggest issues. The other issue that is huge for us is affordable housing.
If you're just joining us, I'm Nan Holmes with Central Texas Leadership Series, and today I'm visiting with Jill McCall, who is the Executive Director of Compassionate Ministries. And I love, you can talk all you want, because I want to hear, what is the second thing?
The second thing, and the huge thing, is affordable housing in Waco.
Anywhere,
is,
I guess.
I mean, having grown up in Waco, I mean, I lived in Waco. I lived in the 76707 zip code. I would, as a child, like I say, my dad had died, my mom was working, but I remember riding the bus down to 18th and Concord. I had a piano teacher. Somehow my mother paid for that. I don't know how, but she did. And I would go as a 7 or 8 year old child on the bus and go to 18th and Concord and walk to my piano teacher's house. And, you know, but all of that housing in that area, that was all built, just really most of it post World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it wood houses. And all of that is, a lot of it is still the same housing that was there when I grew up. And it's time. I mean, it is time for their, what has happened, and I certainly appreciate all that has happened in the last 5 years to Waco. It's phenomenal for business, for tourism, for everything. But also what that has done, it has increased the amount of rent for most places far beyond what many people in Waco making can afford. Literally.
Very good point.
If you need a two-bedroom apartment for a family with children, and it's $900, $850, $800, you've got to be making three times that amount for them to even rent to you. And many of the people in Waco do not make that much money.
Yeah, especially if they're fast food workers or just contract workers. It's just sometime up and down, up and down.
And for people to even say $10 an hour, if you multiply out $10 an hour times 40 hours a week times 52 weeks, that still is not enough money to take care of a family. It is not. It is, and that is, you know, they say that's our living wage, but that is not our living wage. It can't, you can't, it doesn't work. The math doesn't work.
Well, I know it, and it just, I'm glad to hear you say all these things because it's important to remind our listeners that there are people out there who are struggling mightily, and they are trying their best.
Oh, absolutely.
Just harder than maybe I've ever tried. I've seen so many families who are trying to do everything they can just to survive. And there's so many issues that are bombarding them, so many landmines that are out there for them. But I really think that Compassionate Ministries is unique, and there's a great need for what they do here. And I remember going over there one time. The new part was built, and you were literally tearing down the walls of the old part. I went in there, I was like, my goodness, I don't know if I could do that. But it has been built and maintained with a great deal of love and compassion, but also some tough love, too.
Oh,
I think you have that to deal with. You can, it's easy to be all lovey and kind, but you have to have tough love.
Our system, and I think a lot of this comes to me from my experience at Juvenile, the tough love kind of thing, it is... Truly, I tell people if I'm having an issue with a resident, this is not a place for R&R. This is a place of A&R, accountability and responsibility. Now, if you come in here and you work our program, we will bend over backwards to help you achieve everything that you want to achieve, no matter what. But if you want to come in here and play games, it's time for you to go. I have people on the waiting list, and we are not going to waste our time if you're not going to work this program. We make it very clear to people it is not just a place to live. It is a program, and you have to participate, you know, and we want the best for everybody. I mean, I would love to say that everybody graduates from our program, but it's never going to happen. Nan, I will say this. When I was at Juvenile, I realized there were two issues that basically hit every one of the kids I saw. Number one, their failure to take responsibility and wanting immediate gratification for things. You know, I see a CD. I want the CD. I realize I could save up my money and work for that CD, but it would be a lot easier to put it in my pocket and try and walk out of the store. Okay. That sums that up. I thought when I went to Compassion that I would be leaving that. I did not. It is the same two issues sometimes that are preventing people from really moving on to the next level. The failure to take responsibility maybe for some decisions maybe that were made many years before.
Yeah, laid down before.
And then wanting immediate gratification. It is another thing that I'm really sad about that I can't really blame sometimes the people for. But when a person is admitted and we get a background check which shows the credit history, and I see tens of thousands of dollars in credit debt, now, they may have been working, but how did they ever qualify to get this much credit and be this much in debt? That is a real question and a real problem.
Jill, this has been wonderful to talk with you. We could go on and on, but before we wrap things up, I want to congratulate you for being the Chamber of Commerce first Athena Award. When I saw that in the newspaper, in your pretty picture, I thought, gosh, there is no one more deserving. Just congratulations to you, and I hope that success will continue to come because I consider your program a great success. I look forward to just looking in the paper and seeing more and glorious things because you've all worked so hard.
The greatest thing I think that I realize that Compassion gives the structure and the accountability. And also, I think that if you treat people with respect and dignity and you offer them a wonderful, clean, safe environment for them and their children to live in while they're while they're trying to get their life back together. It makes all the difference in the world. We're showing people these, look at this. You can have a nice place like this if you work hard, if you take care of your money, if you take care of your children and do the right thing, these things will come. And that, to me, is what is so great about compassion.
Oh, that's a wonderful way to end this conversation, and I hope we'll visit again much, much sooner.
This and past episodes are archived on our website at kwbu.org under the Programs tab.